Houston, flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
FDE is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Tuesday night edition of the show, 17th of August. Welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm doing just fine. I'm sitting here at my shiny, conservative red new desk.
Ah, very cool. And I'm sitting here trying to lower my blood pressure from all the goings-on that I heard on TV today.
Well, yeah, there is that. And, you know, folks, I got to tell you, we're going to spend the whole first segment on the Afghanistan situation, these press conferences that we've been watching over the last couple of days. Now, today, Diane and I kind of took turns. We kind of tag-teamed the press conference deals today because they were just pissing us off. So, but I did go back and watch some of the one. I couldn't watch all of it, but some of the one that you watched early this afternoon. And yikes. That's all I can say about that. Yikes. Later in the show, let me tell you, folks, what we've got coming up for you later in the show. Diane, you're covering important news times two.
Yes, one of those bits of news is Afghanistan up to this point.
Right.
And the other has to do with the infrastructure bill. That's okay. Not so good.
No, it's not. It's really, really not. I'm covering a thin blue line.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, dealing with the situation with cops in Chicago.
Yes.
So that's what we've got coming up. You know, I mean, I've gotten some really nice comments on it. It's gone over really well. And that's fantastic. But that's what we've got coming up. Now, also, I want to let people in on what we're doing next Tuesday. Friday, of course, we've got just a talk show. And I don't know if there's really anything going on in the news that we'll be talking about on Friday, but, you know, we'll struggle. we'll find something. But Tuesday, both of our segments on Tuesday are going to deal with Afghanistan.
Yeah, it's going to sort of be an Afghan special. And the situation going on there now, it's really, Biden has committed, as far as I'm concerned, a crime against humanity.
I would tend to agree with you.
Yeah, because the, you know, everybody's talking about what's happening in Kabul, but they're forgetting the Taliban has taken over the rest of the country. And it's in places we're not seeing on the media, on the news, what's going on. People are being killed, women are being killed, raped, whatever. But it's not out there because the media is focusing on Kabul.
Right. Right. But there's a lot of stuff swirling around that. So,
very much so.
You know, and that's what we're going to be talking about in both of our segments next Tuesday night.
Yes.
So, you know, we've got that, all that coming up Friday. Honestly, I mean, things are happening so fast and it's so bad right now mm-hmm. on so many fronts. I'm sure we can find stuff to talk about come Friday.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure Afghanistan's going to be part of it. When we probably will not make the whole show about that because we've got the special on Tuesday.
Right. But we will get into parts of it, you know.
Yes, we will.
Because there's going to be things happening that are not going to be contained in the articles that we're putting together for next Tuesday. So, you know, we'll touch on that for part of the show on Friday, and then the rest of the show will be other crap that's going on in the world. You know, so we'll...
Well, crap's not exactly the wrong word. It's just not the most astute of words, shall we say.
Well, let's just say that what's going on out there in the world is not very astute either. You know, I mean... It's kind of a vulgar word, you know, for you know, getting across the point, but still, it's pretty accurate.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so press conferences. Let's start with yesterday's, not really a press conference, but speech that Biden gave. And I'll tell you what, as speeches go, as you know, White House type speeches go, that was pathetic.
It was beyond pathetic. It was actually an insult to those who served in Afghanistan, to the families of those whose family members didn't make it home from Afghanistan, to every veteran and service member, and we the people, because it really is Obama running the show, but all Biden did was lie, lie, lie.
Well, and, you know, I mean, did he say the buck stops with me? Yes.
Yes.
Did it? No. Because he blamed everybody.
Everybody. Himself.
Yeah, well... You know, I mean, he blamed four, you know, the three past presidents.
Right.
He blamed the military. He blamed the Taliban. It was just blame, 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 blame. And then at the end of all the blaming, he says, well, the buck stops with me. Well, come on. You know, I mean, he never took responsibility for it.
No, and it was so bad that service members have actually now popped in with their opinions of the speech. And one of them, Army veteran Matt Zeller, he didn't mince any words at all. And he actually said, and I'm going to quote, "I feel like I watched a different speech than the rest of you guys." He was talking about the media of on NBC, where he was being interviewed. He said, "I was appalled. There was such a profound, bold-faced lie in that speech. The idea that we plan for every contingency. I have been personally trying to tell this administration since it took office. I have been trying to tell our government for years this was coming. We sent them plan after plan on how to evacuate these people, and nobody listened to us." That's from a man who served there and tried to warn every administration that this was coming. But most importantly, the Biden administration. Trump did want to pull us out of Afghanistan, but he was still going to leave a certain number of troops behind.
Right.
Not hightail it and run.
Yeah, this was just cut and run. That's all this was.
Yes.
You know, yes. This turned into cut and run. Now, I got to bring this up because nobody in the mainstream media is going to talk about it. And frankly, I haven't heard anybody else talk about it at all. So you and I are going to talk about this. During the speech yesterday, Biden's speech,
okay,
I could see the medication wearing off about 10 minutes in.
Well, as I was watching the speech, I noticed his skin color, his pallor changed. He got very white, and his eyes got like slits, very sleepy. I also noticed he kept rubbing behind his right ear. I'm assuming that's where the mic was that was feeding him what he was supposed to say. Because I don't believe, with those squinty little eyes and the demeanor that he was in, that he was capable of reading off a teleprompter.
Well, that was another part of the problem, because about 10 minutes in is where he started to trip all over some of the words in the teleprompter.
Yes.
And he seemed to be having trouble focusing on it. And, you know, he at one point he was talking about, you know, this is how I honestly feel. And you could see his eyes moving on the lines of the teleprompter. You could see him reading that. Now, if this is how you honestly feel, you don't need to read that off a teleprompter.
No, not at all. And if you notice, he also was very jittery throughout parts of the speech. Physically jittery. You can see his hand shaking and his countenance sort of like swaying a bit.
Yeah. He started out pretty much normal. Okay. Normal for him. But about 10 minutes in, it all started to come apart. And, that's about where the color of his skin started to fade. It's where he started the jitters and started tripping over words and not getting things right. And you could tell, you know, he was struggling up there.
Yes.
Now, as soon as he was done, when he uttered the last word, he turned and out the door he went. That was the end of it.
Right. No questions, no anything.
No anything. He went from there right back to vacation.
Yeah. The man thinks, I guess, that this situation isn't serious enough to really cancel his vacation.
You know, I mean, it was almost like it was an imposition for him to come and say anything, which I'm sure it was an imposition. I mean, when you have to get all medicated up just to go out and stand in front of a camera for 20 minutes, okay, anytime that happens, it's going to be an imposition. But for the love of God.
Well, have you noticed Biden's speeches? All the speeches he makes are held to about that 20-minute increment, because after that, he loses it completely.
Well, he does. And I'll tell you, one of the tells, you know, like when you play poker, you know, professional poker players, they read other people's tells, and they kind of know when they're getting ready to bluff or when they actually have a good hand. You know, well, Biden's tell is when he's talking and then he leans into the microphone and goes into that weird half-whisper thing that he does. That's one of the tells that he's losing it, that he's completely losing it.
Yeah. His dementia, or whatever it is, it kicks in at a certain point and he can't keep a cohesive thought. So in his mind, he thinks by lowering his voice and speaking very slowly that people are going to say, oh, he's very emotional or something. That might have worked on day one. By day two, we all saw through it.
Yeah. And so that was going on during that speech too. So that speech was almost as big of a disaster as the fall of Afghanistan itself, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. But the Democrats, of course, not all of them, but the majority of them, are heralding that speech of last night as one of the greatest speeches given. Well, you know what I'll equate that to? Remember the fantastic speech that Ronald Reagan gave after the Challenger explosion?
Well, yeah, but I mean, come on, Diane, that's almost unfair. I mean,
what I'm saying is, as good as that speech was, and it's probably my favorite speech.
Mine too.
Of all time. Biden's was the direct opposite. It was one of the worst speeches ever given by a U.S. president because it was filled with nothing but lies and hate for our country and our military.
I'll agree with you. I'll agree with you. Okay, if you're gonna compare it in that way, I'll agree with you. But you know, to try and hold everybody to the standard of President Ronald Reagan in the Challenger speech is pretty unfair, because
that was one of the greatest speeches ever given.
Oh my God, that was something. And to this day, if I watch that speech, I get choked up.
So do I.
You know,
and that's why we have it as a permanent fixture on our Right Side Patriots website, because we are both so enamored and proud of it at the same time.
Yeah, it's unbelievably great.
Well, this speech last night was the antithesis of that. It was the polar opposite. It was a disgrace.
Now, given the fact that this is an enormously bad situation, that's transpiring even as we speak now in Afghanistan, the speech yesterday was at 4 o'clock Eastern time. Not prime time. Oh, no. Oh, no. They're not going to prop him up and medicate him up for a prime time speech, because too many people would be watching a prime time speech.
Too many.
You know, so, you know, you got to do it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, and I think that's because the baked potatoes are done at 5 o'clock at the Golden Corral. So,
right. And the pudding will be ready by six.
Right. So, you know, you don't want to interfere with that. You know, you get somebody in his mental state, you know, timing is everything. You know, you got to keep them on a schedule, or they just fly off the handle. So, you know, that's what that comes down to. Okay, so today, this morning, it was my turn to be angered, pissed off, annoyed, whatever you want to call it. I was watching the press conference at the Pentagon. There was a major general and the Pentagon press secretary. Yeah, those were the only two people involved in this thing. And if you think the lies were flowing fast and free from Biden yesterday, that didn't hold a candle to what was going on in this press conference at the Pentagon today. They kept being asked, and this time they were taking questions from the media, and they kept being asked, does the U.S. military have a plan in place to help people get from their homes in Kabul to the airport for evacuation? They wouldn't answer that question. They refused to answer that question. They said, do we have a plan in place to get people in other places in Afghanistan to the airport in Kabul to get them even? Wouldn't answer. And all they would say is, we have the airport secured. As you know, the airport has been secured. As you know, the U.S. military has secured the airport. That's all they would say.
Which is basically saying nothing.
Right. That's basically saying, no, we don't have a plan.
Exactly.
You know, and the press kept asking questions. They kept dodging the questions. It was the most useless press conference, but I was getting so PO'd that I was about ready to throw something at the TV. I wanted to punch somebody in the nose. The problem was I had no idea who to start with.
I know. So guess what, folks? He took it out on me and ranted about that press conference.
I
had my chance to rant about the one I saw that he didn't.
Well, I when the thing was done, I called, you know, Diane on Skype, and I'm like, you wouldn't believe this crap, you know, and I went off on it. So then, you know, we take another break. Diane watches something. I don't know she's watching it, okay? I'm intentionally not. All right. And so Diane then Skypes me and says, I'm so mad at that stupid idiot. I wanted to punch him out. I'm like, Diane, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
But continue. So you watched this thing this afternoon, and apparently Circleback Saki was there.
Her and the Biden's defense secretary. And what that man claimed was that the White House, meaning Joe Biden, said that more troops would have been needed to stop the Taliban.
What?
Really, Joe? Really? The world's greatest fighting force needed more troops to stop a ragtag group of Islamic barbarians? No. No frickin' way. Anything that happens from the day Biden announced our withdrawal, any blood that has been shed, as far as I'm concerned, is on Joe Biden's hands. I was so mad that I wanted to throw something at the television. Seriously.
Well,
it was the biggest disgrace to this country that I have ever seen. And Jen Psaki, she's just a frickin' liar, a loon, and a butt kisser. That's all she is.
In that order?
Well, you can switch the order around if you want.
Well, I'll tell you what. Like I said, I went back after Diane ranted at me, and it took me about 5 minutes to get out of her what it was she was so pissed about. You know, and then when she told me, I'm like, oh no, I didn't watch that. I couldn't, after what I watched this morning, I couldn't possibly, you know. But being the glutton for punishment that I am, I did go back and watch some of it on YouTube. And guess what I saw when I watched, you know, I thought, I can't sit here and watch the whole thing. I'll break my computer. So I just put my cursor and clicked and thought, wherever that is, whatever they're talking about, I'll listen to that for like 5 minutes and then I'm going to shut it off. So guess what I heard?
What did you hear? Which point?
I heard that the United States, this is according to National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, okay? And that guy is a freaking weasel.
Oh, yes.
All right,
yes.
Let me just point that out. That guy's a freaking weasel, all right? But according to him, the Taliban is going to make sure that American civilians in Afghanistan get to the airport in Kabul safely. Not our American military. We're sending 6,000 troops back to Afghanistan. No, no, no. They're not in charge of escorting American citizens. We are trusting a known terrorist organization that hates us to safely see to it that our American citizens over there get to the airport.
In the meantime, they have totally now surrounded the airport in a big circle of Taliban fighters, and nobody is allowed in anymore. Who's ever at the airport right now, that's who's at the airport. And this is who Biden is trusting.
Yeah, get this. Here's the quote from this guy. I had to go find it so I could tell folks this. Quote, "The Taliban have informed us that they are prepared to provide safe passage of civilians to the airport, and we intend to hold them to that commitment."
Oh, yeah, and how are we going to hold them to that commitment when we're pulling our military out, you dolt?
Exactly.
It just gets me mad. It just...
Well, there we go, folks. I've done it. I set her off.
This is not the country that I grew up in. This is not the country where at least we felt safe under President Trump. This is not the America that we love. This is some country now that has become unrecognizable to us.
Let me just say, we do not cede the safety of American civilians to international terrorist organizations.
First of all, you shouldn't be negotiating with terrorists, period. You kill terrorists before they kill you. But not according to Biden. Just like with Obama, you gotta play nice.
Well, I mean, what kind of a goofy ass deal do we have with the Taliban? Look, you get our civilians to the airport safely or else. Really? Or else what? Or else no pudding for you? I mean, what the hell?
Well, maybe as part of the deal, the Taliban, you know, Joe Biden gave them Democrat voting cards so they can vote for Democrats. Maybe that's part of the deal.
Wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, it's so ludicrous that anything is possible. What Joe Biden has done, in my opinion, not only with the sellout of an ally with a country that we're supposed to be there protecting and helping to free, but what he has done is traitorous actions against America, against one of our allies. This is a disgrace.
It's a total disgrace. You want a bigger disgrace?
Sure.
Do you know who one of the main Taliban leaders is? Now, I'm not going to try and pronounce this guy's name because my tongue will snap off its roller, okay? But one of their main leaders, and again, we have ceded the security and safety of American citizens in Afghanistan to the Taliban, to a known international terrorist organization. One of their main leaders, now in charge of the safety of American citizens, is a guy Obama let out of Gitmo.
Yes. Are you talking about Baradar?
I don't know
Baradar,
if that's...
Ghani Baradar is now the official Taliban leader. He's their public face, so to speak.
I don't think it's him. It's another guy. It's a different guy. And it's somebody that Obama let loose from Gitmo.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Obama is pulling all the strings here. Do you honestly think Joe Biden, in his state of mind, thought of pulling troops out of Afghanistan? Don't you think it was Obama?
Please. Of course it was.
Of course.
Of course it was. You know, but this is the situation. I mean, look, we watched a speech. We watched two press conferences. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of crap that we've been hearing coming from this bunch of asshats in Washington, D.C. for the past day and a half. It's not going to get any better, folks. This is not going to get any better.
No, it's going to get worse. And wait till some of those that are being killed are the Americans that can't get out, or even our remaining military in their efforts to get out. They become fair game for the Taliban. Oh, they're our enemies, so we can kill them. It's going to get very bloody, very fast.
This is an absolute disgrace, what's going on there right now, and there's no good reason for it. There's only bad reasons for it, and we're going to get into those reasons next Tuesday.
Yeah, and there's some reasons, folks, you have not heard before, but when I tell you them, you're going to go, she's right.
Well, they're going to say she's right after they say, holy crap.
Yeah.
Okay.
Holy crap's going to come first, because there's more going on, more reasons going on for why we stayed in Afghanistan and why suddenly we have to get out of Afghanistan.
Yep. Okay, so we've survived the first segment of tonight's show.
Yes, we have.
We blew a couple of gaskets, but that's okay. I mean, look, this whole thing has just got us angry beyond belief. So yes, bear with us. We're going to take a break. We're going to cool off just a little bit. And a little bit later, about a half an hour from now, I'm talking about a thinner, thin blue line. But when we come back from this break, Diane's got it with important news times two. So stay with us, folks. There's more Right Side Patriots after this. You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Welcome to the show, folks. We hope you don't miss any of it, but if you do, you can become a pod person. All you have to do is go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button. Podbean hosts our podcasts, and there we shall be. All right, Diane, so you have taken on two, count them, two important news topics that have been popping around, one being Afghanistan, the other being that god-awful trillion-plus dollar debacle in Congress.
Right, and let's start with this quote. It is disappointing that some weak winos completely caved to Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats who want to push irresponsible socialist legislation that jeopardizes the future of all Americans. That was said by former Missouri governor and now Senate candidate Eric Greitens. Last Tuesday, while the 24/7 news cycle was focused on Andrew Cuomo's sexual conundrum and his then-announced resignation, Joe Biden secured a policy win of sorts. But it's a policy win that, as usual, comes with a very high price tag, a price tag we the people will now shoulder for generations to come, a price tag we simply cannot afford, what with rising inflation and consumer prices soaring to their highest level in 13 years. And it's a price tag that, according to the Congressional Budget Office, will add a whopping $256 billion to the deficit over 10 years. But none of that seems to matter. What with the Senate passing Biden's $1.2 trillion 8-year infrastructure package in a 69-30 vote, a vote where we bore witness to 19 Republican senators selling out to Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and the Democrats in a claimed show of bipartisanship. And the only positive derived from this disaster of a vote is that hopefully now we will see those 19 Rhino senators voted out of office when they come up for re-election. Sorry, Lindsey Graham, but that includes you and Mitch McConnell, too. And why is this vote so grievous when bipartisanship is something we should actually strive for? Because this supposed infrastructure package has more pork in it than anything else. In fact, pork might not be the correct word, for this package, as it's nothing but politically generated wokeism come to life. And while many media pundits think the bill, which Biden and crew claim will help to ignite economic growth and create jobs, is a shoo-in to pass in the House, Craig, that just might not be the case.
Well, it just might not be. When you look at this bill, and you did, and I did, and I'm sure some of our listeners did, there, you said it, this thing is loaded with pork, but that $1.2 trillion, that really is just the tip of the pork iceberg, isn't it?
Yes, because people have to understand that because the far left wing of the Democrat Party, the reason it'll be so bad is because they have tied the passage of that bill to the passage of their proposed $3.5 trillion anti-poverty climate change efforts, neither of which have anything to do with infrastructure repairs or upgrades. And second, because the Job Act's part of this bill, while it might sound good on the surface, is actually racist in nature, because the jobs, projects, and contracts spoken of in it are being created and given out based not upon merit, but upon race. In other words, neighborhoods in which jobs are targeted to be created are not only in neighborhoods where people of color are in the majority, but when a contractor or a subcontractor bids on a specific project, the bill states that minority-owned businesses, which includes businesses owned by women, will get selected first, even if a white-owned business is more suited for said project. Simply, what we're seeing here is just more race-based pork dressed in whatever is its current vernacular guise, and that probably will not sit too well with voters come the midterm elections. And with all House members being up for re-election in 2022, the more moderate Democrat House members rightfully see this bill as being a possible albatross around their necks. And why? Because they know that if passed, this extremely high-ticket bill could be the political death knell for Democrats in key red states, especially after the Keystone Pipeline disaster that has Joe Biden's name written all over it, as well as the obvious ploy of their allocating our taxpayer dollars to benefit those of color, with white folks be damned. Simply, more and more moderate Democrats are themselves getting tired of and are politically nervous about all this people of color, minority-based hate whitey propaganda. So while the 2,702-page bill entitled the Infrastructure Investment and Job Acts, H.R. 3684, reauthorizes federal funding on already existing federal public works programs that will supposedly modernize and upgrade our nation's aging and outdated infrastructure, as into much-needed repairs to roads, highways, and bridges, said bill still adds, among other things, an additional $550 billion in new spending going into numerous water projects, including lead pipe replacement, upgrading the electrical grid, so-called safety projects, the building of a national network of charging stations for electric vehicles, and the expanding of broadband internet access, something, Craig, of which is not really infrastructure related, nor is it really needed.
So now we got to supplement charging stations for electric cars? Holy right. crap.
That Holy are crap. Too expensive for most people to buy.
Yeah, most people mm-hmm. can't afford the things to begin with. Okay, so look, there's a lot of red flags in this thing. What's one of the biggest red flags?
Okay. First, you got to understand that the broadband internet access is not the worst in this bill, not by a long shot. For what's tied into both the bill's ultimate passage and Joe Biden's signature is something that should send up red flags across party lines, with that something being that said bill actually equates to more of our taxpayer dollars being funneled into the far left's anti-American, anti-capitalism, wokeism agenda. And how do I know this? Because for months now, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has openly stated that the House would proceed on a what's called dual-track strategy for infrastructure, a strategy he claims was necessary to keep both the progressives and moderates in his Senate caucus on board, and that the aim was always to jointly pass both the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure deal and the much larger Democrat vote-only needed anti-poverty climate change package, Biden's so-called human infrastructure bill, which together has the potential of seeing a whopping $3.5 trillion price tag and includes, among other things, expanding the child tax credits, establishing paid family and medical leave, the funding of universal preschool and free community college, and further action on climate change. You know, the weather. So what this twofer really is nothing but a politically driven wokeism dream come true, as it includes the implementing of AOC's disastrous Green New Deal, programs related to identity agenda, and racially equity nonsense. And notice I said equity, not equality. Plus a redirecting of funds from the still much needed $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, a package Biden had earlier this year signed on to, and funneled those monies into what are lopsided and oh so ridiculous social justice programs. In fact, the ever vile Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, has let it be known that the House, which is currently on summer hiatus, will not even take up what is now last week's Senate-passed bipartisan bill until Senate Democrats pass the aforementioned, which should be a separate package without GOP votes, via the budget reconciliation process, the process by which a bill can be brought up for a Senate vote and passed with a simple majority, as long as said bill affects federal spending and revenue. And unfortunately, the currently still lumped together two-fer spending bill does just that. And sadly, it's an early Merry Christmas lump of coal from the powers that be to we, Craig, the still economically hurting American people.
Well, that spending bill and the one coming up behind it are atrocious. And everybody knows it. You know, and like you said, you've got 19 Republicans in the Senate that jumped ship and voted in favor of that thing. And I think you've got a footnote at the bottom of your op-ed where you can actually see who those people were. But that is just one of the two things you decided to cover in this particular op-ed. The other just happens to be the Afghanistan thing. Now, I want to point out to people, you wrote this last week. Okay, this was before the you know, absolute crush in Kabul took place. So, you know, this is one of those things you could see it coming. I could see it coming. Hell, Stevie Wonder could see it coming.
I know. And let's start with this quote by Pentagon spokesman John Kirby. Quote, They have the advantage in numbers, in operational structure, in air forces, and in modern weaponry. And it's really about having the will and the leadership to use those advantages to their own benefit. The recipe can't be just a constant U.S. presence in Afghanistan that never ends. Now, also something of importance lost in the afterglow of Andrew Cuomo's resigning from office is indeed Afghanistan, with parallels to Vietnam duly noted, and with Biden basically turning the country over to the Taliban, which is not unlike Nixon turning over South Vietnam to the communists. Biden's ordered withdrawal of all American troops by August 31st remains in place. Turning his back on both the Afghan people and the Afghans who helped our troops, not only as translators, but in the actual fight against these most vicious of Muslim extremists, memories of for many of Nixon ordering our troops' departure and desperate Vietnamese civilians running towards transport planes must surely come to mind. And to that end, last Thursday, due to Afghanistan's deteriorating security situation, and after speaking with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, along with the State Department, very strongly urged all remaining Americans in Afghanistan to depart the country immediately. And they also announced that temporarily being deployed to Afghanistan would at that time be 5,000 troops to aid in what was once called a drawdown of the U.S. Embassy in Kabul, a drawdown that would have resulted in a mere core diplomatic presence within the city, a drawdown that has now become an emergency evacuation of all Western diplomats and civilians, what with the Taliban now having entered the Afghan capital. And with two-thirds of Afghanistan already under their control, and with Jalalabad falling into Taliban hands less than a week ago, what was predicted to be Kabul's fall within a few weeks has already taken place, with the Taliban's first act being the freeing of what's believed to be thousands of inmates from the city's Pul-e-Charkhai prison, with government forces offering no resistance. And Craig, with the announcing that Afghan's President Ashraf Ghani had fled the country late Sunday afternoon, the fate of Kabul was sealed, with the Taliban then entering the presidential palace.
Well, this John Kirby, this Pentagon spokesman, he's the press secretary for the Pentagon. He was one of the two idiots I was watching in that press conference today. Yeah. And I wouldn't give you a dime for anything he says being true. But this guy last week was talking about, you know, the drawdown and how mm-hmm. all this was going to be so smooth. What happened?
Yeah. Well, first he said, and I should say, I said, while the formally called drawdown of what was supposed to be a mission focused on, quote, safeguarding the orderly reduction of civilian personnel out of Afghanistan, as per Pentagon spokesman John Kirby, the fact is that with the Taliban now having entered in Kabul, said reduction is but wishful thinking, for time itself dictates that while the clock ticks down, said reduction will not be large enough in scope to safely evacuate all the Afghan civilians and their families who sided with and aided our fighting forces. And this is no matter that a joint 1,000-person unit from the U.S. Army and Air Force is being deployed to Qatar to help process visas for those Afghans who helped the U.S. But know that neither the time frame allotted nor the number of persons involved can bring all the Americans and Afghan folks to safety. And really, why are visas even needed when it's a humanitarian crisis that's unfolding for those Afghans who risk their lives helping the U.S. when our southern border sees the welcome mat being laid out for disease-carrying illegals, illegals with their hands out, for whom visas are a dirty word? Guess we all know the answer to that now, don't we? As well as we know why Biden won't send troops to said border. So while a U.S. infantry brigade does remain positioned in Kuwait, if needed, to help secure the now emergency evacuation main point of departure, as in the Hamid Karzai Airport. Know that because of Joe Biden, America now sadly leaves Afghanistan in defeat. After the Afghan military we both financed and trained began to unravel soon after his April misguided decision to announce for all to hear the pullout date of all U.S. troops, channeling his inner Obama, I guess. Now taking away the Afghan military's much-needed logistical, air, and moral support, this sad end did not have to be. If only we and Afghan's President Ghani had not foolishly engaged in U.S.-sponsored so-called peace talks. And it's these peace talks where, as expected, the Taliban lied about their intentions while preparing for what was and has now proven to be a highly successful so-called lightning offensive, an offensive taking a bit over a week's time to accomplish. So lessons from the past, including lessons learned in Vietnam, should have taught us that to truly win any war, no matter whom the enemy is, that hard battles must be fought and blood must be shed, like in both world wars, and that collateral damage is destined to happen. Fighting a war to win the hearts and minds of the enemy, in fact, trying to make friends with the enemy, does nothing but lay the groundwork for losing any given war, with Afghanistan now being a prime example. Simply, we either should have gone into Afghanistan strong and bombed the Taliban out of existence, or not gone in at all. That's one lesson that should have been learned from Russia's defeat as well. Yet there's still a bit of time, well, maybe not with this week's latest updates, but maybe there's a bit of time to correct some mistakes made, but that can only be done via a commander-in-chief who is of the right mind to know that by our leaving Afghanistan, it creates a Middle East vacuum of power that will not end well for the U.S., for Israel, or for the West, as the Taliban will surely align themselves with both Iran and China. In fact, China has already stated that they will recognize the Taliban as the legitimate ruler of Afghanistan when Kabul is fully and totally under their control, which unfortunately, as I was writing this, had started to happen. And it started to happen no matter that the Taliban had promised not to take over the capital by force, not to assume power directly, and not to act as the puppet master for what was hoped would be a peacefully initiated transition of government. But sadly, that is not now, nor was it ever reality. For when one is dealing with barbaric, murdering savages like the Taliban, promises made are always not kept. And this now leaves heaven alone to help the rightfully scared Afghan people. Think I'm wrong? I guarantee that time itself will show you that I'm not. Case closed.
Well, and, you know, when you say time itself will show that you're not wrong about that, that time came up over the weekend.
Exactly. This was already locked and loaded before the latest development happened.
You know, you look at Saturday and Sunday this past weekend, and it all went to hell in a handbag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those people that you predict and say are rightfully scared and are now, you know, or you predicted would be in grave danger, they are.
Absolutely they are. You know, we promised never to leave anyone behind. Unfortunately, because of Joe Biden, there will be Americans left behind. There will be Afghan allies left behind. And every one of their deaths, which I'm sure will happen, will be on Joe Biden's hands.
Well, and, you know, quite frankly, and we'll get into this more next Tuesday in the Afghan special, but quite frankly, some of those allies are already dead.
Absolutely already dead.
You know, and like I said, we'll get into that. I don't want to belabor that point now because, you know, we've got this Afghan special coming up a week from tonight. And obviously this Friday we're doing a talk show and we will have to deal some with Afghanistan, but we're not going to go in depth on Friday because of what we have coming up next Tuesday.
Right.
So, but between now and next Tuesday, there's going to be a lot more manure hitting the fan.
A tremendous, tremendous amount. And, you know, I watch the goings-on on TV. And one thing that's blatantly obvious to me is these people at the airport are mostly young men.
Right.
There's very few women and children. You have to wonder why. And one of the things I'm wondering is some of these people, actually plants by the Taliban to get into our country and cause trouble.
Well, I think we know that's coming.
We know that's coming. I also wonder why Biden didn't order the immediate protection of the Afghan women who helped us.
What does he care? What does he care? I mean, they're nowhere close enough to him for him to sniff them or feel them up. So
what does he care about? And there was also, I guess, his hasty withdrawal from Afghanistan also has to do with there was no money being made for him there. You know, not like with Burisma.
Right. Hunter doesn't have a deal with Afghanistan.
Yeah, Hunter didn't have a deal for Daddy to capitalize on. It's to that point, folks. We have to be cynical about what's happening because what's happening in Afghanistan is just wrong.
Well,
it's a sellout of a people, a country, and our country and our military as well.
But let's be honest about this. The cynicism turns out to be the truth in these cases. So, I mean, it's not like we're being cynical for the sake of being cynical. We're simply, it sounds cynical, but it is simply the truth. Look, folks, Diane covered two great topics in this. There's a lot of information in this one op-ed, not only about Afghanistan, but about these god-awful spending bills that are whistling their way through Congress right now that really, in and of themselves, stand a good chance of destroying the freedoms that we have in this country or what few we have left.
Right. So and also in this article, I have actually included a video of the Taliban entering Kabul as, you know, the government forces were hightailing it and running. And I've also included some explanation on what a core diplomatic presence means, and that's also in a footnote.
Right.
So, it's just interesting little side things, but the video of the Taliban entering Afghanistan's capital, it's heartbreaking at the same time that it makes you angry.
Yep, it does both those things. Folks, what I want you to do is I want you to grab this link to this particular op-ed, Important News Times 2. You can get it at Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, or you can get it at rspradio1.com. Either way, grab the link, read the article for yourselves, and share it everywhere. And remember, we've got more articles coming out, both of us do, regarding Afghanistan next Monday that we're going to deal with on this show next Tuesday. Okay, rspradio1.com or thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com. That's where you get Diane's op-eds. So grab them and share them everywhere. Now, with that, we have made it to the end of this segment. We've got one segment to go. Got to take a break, get station IDs in. When we come back, a thinner, thin blue line. Stay with us, folks. There's more Right Side Patriots coming up. after this.
Guys, Diane Sori from the Patriot Factor on the patriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sori at the Patriot Factor. Getting you through the Tuesday night edition of the show. Thank you for being a part of it, folks. We appreciate it. All right, so I was sitting around trying to think of something that I was getting so tired of writing about COVID. I was tired of writing about Cuomo. And I thought, you know what? There are other things going on in this nation. And this was, of course, before the whole Afghan debacle, got into full swing But I'll tell you something that's always bothers me is this whole defund the police thing, the anti-cop movement from the liberal Marxists. And I decided to take it on with a focus on Chicago. Okay. So I put together a piece called A Thin Blue Line. What constitutes a mass shooting? By the numbers, a mass shooting is any shooting event in which four or more people are hit by bullets. Again, by the numbers, Chicago has had 212 such mass shootings in which at least four people have been struck by gunfire since 2016. And in those 212 shootings, a total of 1,032 people have been shot, with 126 of them dying of their injuries. None of that takes into account the number of shootings or deaths connected to them in which fewer than four people were hit. Those numbers skyrocket in Chicago, with dozens being shot every week. Mayor Lori Lightfoot has blood dripping from her hands. She has cut funding to the Chicago Police Department. She has made the police in her city into the villains. She has created a system of injustice so substandard that the numbers I am about to provide to you are staggering. Regarding the 212 mass shootings since 2016, shootings that have left 126 people dead, only 21 people have been criminally charged. Only 21. But it gets worse. Much worse. Of the scant 21 people criminally charged in 212 mass shootings since 2016 in Chicago, shootings that resulted in 126 deaths, only two people have been convicted. That leaves 19 criminally charged shooters, two of which were found not guilty, and one which had his case dropped. That's it. Diane, that's the sum total of justice for the deaths of 126 people murdered in Chicago's 212 mass shootings since 2016.
Well, I believe it's gotten even worse since then, that the numbers are increasing at a very, very fast rate. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. This year, for instance, just this year, so far there have been 39 mass shootings in Chicago that have left 214 people wounded and 24 people dead. How many charges have been brought by Chicago's system of injustice this year in those shootings? One person was charged in one case and another person was charged as in connection to one of those other shootings, and so far, nobody has stood trial. In Chicago shooting cases that become cold cases, okay, that's what happens there. They become cold cases before the smoke from the barrels of the shooter's guns disappears in the Windy City's breeze. Lori Lightfoot has been the mayor of Chicago since 2019, and on her watch, there have been 117 mass shootings with 595 people wounded and 61 killed. Lightfoot's numbers have been on a steady incline since she took office. In all of 2019, there were 30 such shootings in which four or more people were wounded, 148 total wounded that year, and 12 deaths. That was 2019. In 2020, the numbers were 48 mass shootings, 233 wounded, and 25 dead. This year, which I might remind you is just barely half over, so far there have been 39, 214, and 24 respectively. Those are all staggering numbers. But why are those numbers what they are? Well, Lori Lightfoot, and just about any garden variety liberal Marxist you care to ask will tell you that the problem is guns. They know better, but they would have you believe that guns by themselves are just strolling out of people's houses, walking or driving themselves through the streets of Chicago or just about any other place, and opening fire spontaneously of their own accord and under some unseen magical power on people who happen to be standing on street corners. Diane, Lori Lightfoot, and just about any garden variety liberal Marxist you care to ask will tell you that there just aren't enough gun laws to curtail the shootings. They know better, but they would have you believe that the criminal element would be curtailed by more gun laws, because criminals, as we all know, always respect the law.
Yeah, sure they do, when hell freezes over. But there's another reason that Chicago is in the state that it is. And it's really because of a certain policy within their city, isn't it?
It is. Chicago is a virtual gun-free zone as it is. It's what the liberal Marxists want for the entire nation. It's their gold standard. There's something else we know regarding gun-free zones, and that is that such places are target-rich zones. And what's more, the criminal element is also fully aware of that fact. The criminal element in Chicago acts with impunity. Thanks to the defunding of the police, there are fewer and fewer cops on the streets to protect and serve, which means fewer and fewer cops to effect arrests or investigate violent crimes. That adds up to the criminal element in Chicago or just about any other big blue city under the control of liberal Marxist machine and its agenda to having less and less to fear, but it goes much deeper than just Chicago. Earlier this year, in late February to be more exact, the Illinois legislature passed House Bill 3653 and Illinois liberal Marxist Governor J.B. Pritzker signed that damn thing into law. House Bill 3653 makes Illinois the first state to completely abolish cash bail. Pritzker said, and I quote, "This legislation marks a substantial step toward dismantling the systemic racism that plagues our communities, our state, and our nation, and brings us closer to true safety, true fairness, and true justice, unquote. Oh, really? Catching a violent criminal, filling out a bit of paperwork, and then turning those criminals loose on the streets an hour later is bringing Chicago closer to true safety, to true fairness, and true justice? Liberal Marxist State Senator L.G.R. Sims Jr., who sponsored the bill in Illinois, said, quote, "History will judge how we responded to this moment, which called for big, bold, transformative changes. This is not a moment for incrementalism, but one which calls for us to reimagine what public safety looks like in this great state," unquote. Well, allow me to remind Sims and Pritzker, for that matter, what the reimagining public safety looks like, which is bringing Chicago closer to true public safety, true fairness, and true justice. Diane, so far this year, which is barely just half over, Chicago has seen 39 mass shootings that have left 214 people wounded and 24 people dead, with just one person directly charged in one of those 39 mass shootings and one other charged in connection to one of those 39 mass shootings.
Well, this is a strange case of what's considered safety, or what should be safety for one being safety for the other, and it's the wrong one on both ends.
Well, if you're looking for true safety, you're right. Maybe it is for the criminals, but not for the law-abiding citizens. True fairness? Maybe for the criminal element, but not for law-abiding citizens. True justice? Clearly not for the 214 people who've been wounded, and clearly not for the 24 whose lives bled out on one of Chicago's street corners and one corner after another. People like Lightfoot, Sims, Pritzker, and just about any garden variety liberal Marxist you care to mention will tell you that laws like House Bill 3653 in Illinois are necessary to overcome systemic racism in the justice system, from the cops to the courts. But that's a load of crap. The Chicago police superintendent is David Brown, and he's black. The mayor of Chicago is Lori Lightfoot, and she's black. The Chicago police force is 50% non-Hispanic white, 25% Hispanic of any race, 21% African American, 3% Asian Pacific Islander, and 1% other. Now that seems about as diverse as a police department can be, and clearly, decidedly, not systemically racist. I'm not here to blow smoke up anybody's ass. There are some bad cops in Chicago, but they are vastly, overwhelmingly outnumbered by damn good cops. But those good cops are fighting an uphill battle against the criminal element that has become emboldened by and championed by Chicago's leadership and the mainstream media. By the end of June of this year, more Chicago cops had retired than did so in all of 2018. More than 400 Chicago cops have retired this year, and the number of new recruits is way, way down. And why wouldn't it be? Lightfoot, elected liberal Marxists in Washington, D.C., and the mainstream media have for years now been demonizing the police. Police in big, deep blue cities have had their hands tied behind their backs, and when they do make an arrest, the criminal is turned loose in an hour to return to the streets and commit more crimes. Diane, Chicago is no exception. And who would want to be a cop under those conditions?
Well, certain musings in the media of late have now said that Lightfoot is actually scared for her political career, and that she's going to start possibly increasing the police budget. I don't know if that's totally going to happen. It was reported in certain legitimate sites, but I just don't see it. Do you?
No, I don't. Let me tell you something along those lines. Liberal Marxists don't want you to know this, But there is something else that they really wish you didn't know. It's the good cops that are turning in their papers and leaving the job in Chicago and other blue cities. Many of them aren't leaving law enforcement. They're just heading to places that are decidedly more appreciative of law enforcement officers. Well, guess what happens when the good cops, those who do care about the safety and well-being of their cities and the law-abiding citizens who live there, leave those cities? Who's left wearing the badge in those cities? Bad cops, or those who really don't care that much. That's who's left, and most of them are just riding out their time. Most, but not all. There are a few good ones who want to make a positive difference, who do care and want to protect and serve as good, solid cops. 29-year-old Ella French was one of those good Chicago cops. So too was her partner. French and her partner were ambushed. She was murdered outright, and her partner was shot in the head on August 7th. Ironically, Officer French and her partner were assigned to the Public Safety Division of the Chicago Police Department. So again, I ask, safety for who? Certainly not for the public, and obviously not for the police. So far this year, in a year that is just barely half over, 38 Chicago police officers have been shot at. 11 were hit, and French was the first to be killed. That is a 500% increase, a 500% increase of officers shot or shot at in Chicago compared with 2019. Liberal Marxists say more gun laws could have prevented Officer French's murder, but that's a lie. The gun used in that ambush murder was purchased legally in Indiana and then given to a criminal, a man who, because of already existing gun laws, was prevented from owning a gun and was in the car from which French and her partner were shot. Under liberal Marxist law, only the bad guys seem to be allowed to have guns. Mm-hmm. You name the big city, and there are two common themes. Crime, especially violent crime, is soaring, and the number of police officers on the streets is dramatically dropping. As long as cities like Chicago continue to demonize their cops and defund their departments, more and more cops are going to walk off the job, and crime rates will continue to skyrocket as a result. The two are completely tied to one another. Elected liberal Marxists know that what I'm saying is true, and they don't care because the outcome is exactly what they want. They want the situation in their cities to get so bad that the people start begging for the government to save them from the problem government created. But it doesn't have to be that way. Here's the dirty secret elected liberal Marxists hope the people never catch on to. It's the end of watch for Officer Ella French, and it's getting close to the end of the line for Chicago. If the people want criminals off their streets, they need to vote the criminals out of City Hall, because until then, nobody is going to be safe, and the thin blue line will just get thinner. And you can take that to the bank.
Yeah. And the officer that was murdered, Ella French, she had a young baby that she leaves behind. And the situation is just getting worse and worse in the city. And it's all being blamed on systemic racism. Guess what, folks? That doesn't exist. Black people have been given more advantages than any other minority group in this country. If they chose not to take those advantages and better themselves, that's their problem. That's not our problem.
I agree. I mean, it's insane, you know, and this is what we're dealing with. You know, right. We're dealing with these types of lies.
Yep.
You know, and it just, it's aggravating as hell to me Okay. What they're saying, what the liberal Marxists are saying, is that police departments like Chicago's, but all police departments, are systemically racist. They say Chicago's police department is systemically racist. Okay. Let me just run through those numbers again. The Chicago police force is 50% non-Hispanic white, 25% Hispanic of any race, 21% African American, 3% Asian Pacific Islander, and 1% other. That is very diverse.
That is extremely diverse. Okay, there is no racism. The only racism that exists is in the Democrats' minds, who are using it to push forward their wokeism political agenda.
Right. Right. That's exactly it. You know, I mean, I've talked about this on the air before, okay, and I'll bring it up again. Oh, in my life, I have gotten to know very well a lot of police officers. I have been related to a lot of police officers. And I've worked with police officers and law enforcement officers in sheriff's departments. Okay, I've worked with them on projects, at events, you know, that type of thing. You know, I haven't lived in Lincoln, Nebraska since 2004. But I can still pick up the phone and call the sheriff of Lancaster County, Nebraska, and have a great conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The former police chief in Lincoln, he's now retired, Tom Cassidy, I can call him. Sheriff Terry Wagner, I can call him. Deputy David Blythe, I can call him. Deputy Terry Jones, I can call him. Former cops in Lincoln, Larry Bratt, I could call him. Kathy Bratt, I could call her. You know, the list just goes on and on and on. The cops are the good guys. And yes, there are bad cops. Okay, nobody's saying very few. But I'll tell you who's harder on bad cops than anybody, and that's good cops.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good cops don't like bad cops. They don't like bad cops at all.
No, because it gives the rest of them a bad name.
Exactly. Exactly. I have always been proud of my association with police officers, law enforcement officers, sheriffs, and sheriff's deputies, and I always will be.
I have police officers in my family. I mean, there's the majority, the vast majority of America's police force are there to serve and protect. They take the oath of their office very seriously. And yet, we have a political party in this country who is trying to make the police the criminals and the criminals the good guys, all for their political gain.
It's sick.
It's very sick.
I mean, it's
very sick.
It's sick and it's wrong. Now, you brought up the idea that Lori Lightfoot in Chicago is thinking about adding funding back into the police department. Well, you know what? She can do whatever she wants, but she has lost the confidence of the police officers. You know,
she's lost the confidence of the police officers, but the liberal Democrats in the city will elect her again.
Well, they might. You know, it just all depends, but there's a good chance that they will elect her again. The problem is, you know, when Ella French was murdered a couple of weeks ago, okay, there's, as always happens, when there's an officer down, police gather up at the hospital. Well, in walks Lori Lightfoot, even after she was advised, don't come here.
Right.
Ella French's parents said, don't come here. Don't you come here. You know, you're not wanted here. Well, she did. She walked in there, and all those cops that were in that hospital turned their back on her. She has lost the confidence of the police department.
Yeah, she walked in there to try to become a hero. Oh, look, I really still care. and the officers were having no part of it, which they're is trained. A good thing. Just like when the officers in New York turned their back on de Blasio.
Police officers are trained to spot liars.
Yeah.
And when one walks into the hospital and strides up to a microphone, they know one when they see one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's Chicago, which was once a great city, as far as I'm concerned, is no longer a great city because it's corrupt.
Well,
and it's not doing anything about the corruption.
You know, Chicago's always been corrupt. I mean, that's just kind of part and parcel of Chicago. I mean, you go back to, you know, Mayor Daley, and you go back you know, the days of Capone and, you know, all that. I mean, Chicago's always, you know, that's part of Chicago. But, you know, the cops in Chicago, that's the thin blue line. That's what keeps the criminal element out of people's houses and out of people's lives. All right?
Right.
You don't want that line getting any thinner than it already is. But it is getting thinner.
Yeah.
You know, that's
and it doesn't
the problem.
It doesn't have to be that way. And you know what? Most of America is tired of it being that way. We support our police. The majority of Americans support our police. But again, a minority with the biggest mouths is dictating the public discourse about the police.
Well, and when you catch and release prisoners that fast, when you literally arrest somebody for committing a crime and they're back on the street in a matter of an hour or two.
Yeah.
You know, because you've taken away bail, and so it's just catch and release. Well, how do you expect police officers to protect in the protect and serve end of that thing if you're just going to put the same criminals back on the street every hour on the hour?
That's one of the reasons a lot of good, decent cops are retiring early. They can't take it anymore.
They're more handcuffed.
They can't do their jobs. They're ridiculed, spit upon, shot at.
They're more
their job of protecting the public.
They're more handcuffed. They're more handcuffed than the criminals.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's sick and it's sad. Folks, you can get this commentary, A Thinner, Thin Blue Line, by either going to thenationalpatriot.com or rspradio1.com. You can get the link either place, and please share it everywhere you can. You know, it's like you said, Diane, the vast majority of people in this country support the police, but when the police are handcuffed, when they are restrained from actually doing the job, there's no more reason for them to be on the job.
Well, that's our politicians and our government's fault.
It is, 100%. Diane's article is available at thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com. My commentary is available at thenationalpatriot.com. Both of them are available at rspradio1.com. So grab those links and share. If you missed any part of tonight's show, please go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning. Be a pod person. Click the podcast button. You will find this show and all the rest right there. Take your pick. Listen to any show you want. Housekeeping chores? Yep. Next Tuesday, a week from tonight, a special regarding Afghanistan. Both of us are going to delve into that in our individual segments. Friday night this week, talk show, will deal with Afghanistan a little bit, but we'll also get you caught up on everything else.
If there's anything else.
Well, you know, we'll find something.
Well, COVID will show up in there somewhere.
COVID will show up. Cuomo will show up because it's getting close to when he has to, you know, jettison his ass out of the governor's mansion. You know, so there'll be something in there that we can discuss. I mean, we can talk. That's it. We can just talk. So, folks, we want to thank you for being a part of the show tonight. We appreciate it. And, Diane, with that, we're plumb out of time.
So I'm going to say nighty-night, folks.
Good night, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you Friday night.